There is much Hebrew wisdom in the amazing book of Proverbs. We'll explore it on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to have a great Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast today. This is Michael Brown. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. 866-348-7884 with any Jewish-related question that you have of any kind. So my mom, almost 94 years old, is as sweet as they come, is not a complainer. She likes to be on her own as much as she can. She's in a home for the place for the elderly, but not the ill. So she, you know, functions through the day. Someone comes in, helps her with her food and things. She's not a complainer, but she's been sick, hasn't been feeling well, and upset yesterday. Something wasn't right. So my wife was over, spent some time with her, and then she wasn't calm. She still was upset, still something the matter, still in pain. Was crying. I was over with her for a few hours, praying with her, giving her some medicine. Then thought, okay, you know, something's not right. We ended up springing into a hospital and getting checked out. And I think that we isolated what the problems were. But I say all that to say this. So I laid down next to my mom on the bed, just while she was just trying to rest and trying to feel better. It's before we ended up going to the hospital. And I'm reading through Proverbs. It just happens to be what I'm reading through these days, reading through Proverbs, and there's one of the verses that says, do not despise your mother when she's old. And, you know, you'd read it, and you think, who would ever despise a parent, a mother, when they're old? But, you know, there is a point with many elderly people where they are in real need, and they may not remember what you said to them 2 minutes ago, and may ask you the same question 20 or 30 times in the course of an hour. And they may struggle in certain ways where they didn't struggle. And they may have nothing in the natural to offer you. And to me, it's a sacred privilege to be able to be there for my mom. It's a sacred privilege to be able to care for you. You hate seeing a parent, a loved one suffer in any way, of course. But as I was thinking about these things, and if you pray for my mom, it's not an urgent life and death thing. I think it's something fairly minor that can be addressed. But, you know, at this age, everything is a bit of a crisis. So if you think of it, just pray for my mom. I'd appreciate it. But I am so amazed with the wisdom of God. I am so amazed with the wisdom of Proverbs. I've read the book, like many of you, over and over and over and over and over again. And many years ago, when I was teaching a series on Proverbs, in fact, I've done this a few times, when teaching a series on Proverbs, each week I would speed read through the book again to look for key verses on whatever subject I was teaching on, and then just list those out and kind of enjoy that experience. But there is so much wisdom. I actually wrote an article for Donald Trump, Proverbs, the Book of Proverbs and a Winning Strategy for Donald Trump, where I go through a number of verses in Proverbs, and I say, sir, if you could learn to live by these, you'll win the campaign, and you could even be an excellent president. And I said, here's my counsel. Start every day, 31 chapters in Proverbs, so roughly one chapter a day equals once a month. Start every day reading a chapter in Proverbs out loud. If you can do it with your closest staff, advisors, family, whoever you can do it with, if you're able. Take 15 minutes a day, maybe, and then after you read it, have a discussion about it, and then ask yourself, because it'll talk about the wise and the fool, the wise and the fool, the wise and the fool. Ask yourself, am I acting like a fool or a wise man? Am I speaking like a fool or a wise man? There's wisdom for Donald Trump. There's wisdom for the homeless person on the street. There's wisdom for the pastor of the world's largest congregation. There's wisdom for a businessman trying to turn things right side up. There's wisdom for a mom struggling at home with her kids, all in the Book of Proverbs.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question of any kind, give me a call. Any Hebrew-related question, give me a call. Any Israel-related question, give me a call. 866-348-7884. Oh, do you live in Greater Brooklyn? September 8th, put it on your calendar. Will be hosted by Chosen People Ministries, September 8th, Thursday night, September 8th. I'm going to be giving a free talk on Isaiah 53, the rabbis and the Messiah. We'll have Q&A, and it'll be meet and greet for our WMCA listeners. Put it on your calendar. I'll tell you a lot more about it as we get closer. That's going to be in Brooklyn, September 8th. And then at the Ethical and Cultural Center in Manhattan, September 10th, Saturday, for all of our friends all over Greater New York, all of our great listeners on WMCA, I'm going to be giving a talk there on the presidential elections and Israel, where the candidates stand on Israel and how that lines up with the Bible. Oh, yeah. So free, open to the public. We'll receive an offering in each meeting to help with the expenses of our radio outreach, our radio broadcast. But I want to see you there. All right, we'll give you more details. Just put it on your calendar. Greater Brooklyn, September 8th. Greater New York, Manhattan, September 10th. 866-348-7884. So let's talk about Proverbs for a little while. A lot of other news to cover, Israel-related news to cover. I want to give you an update on World Vision and some of the questions about someone that worked for them, allegedly funneling money to Hamas, as I've been interacting with folks at World Vision on the highest levels about this. But the Hebrew word for Proverbs is Mishle. Mishle is, that's the name of the book, and it comes from the root mashal. And mashal is a comparison. Mashal can be a parable or a proverb. So Mishle Shlomo, the Proverbs of Solomon, these are his proverbial sayings. They can be sometimes longer, like the opening chapters, chapters 2 through 9 are longer teachings with some little sayings along the way. And then chapter 10 through 31, most of that shorter sayings, pithy sayings, memorable sayings. But many of them are based on this concept of comparison. Now, in English, we have metaphors and we have similes, right? So a simile would be saying like, all right, this is like this. A metaphor, here's an example I'm looking at online, all the world's a stage. That's a metaphor. The world is not actually a stage, right? But it's a metaphor. If you use the simile, you'd be saying all the world is like a stage. You have both of these in Hebrew, and then you have other forms of proverbial sayings, but many of them are very short, many of them are very concise, and they communicate in vivid terms that are especially memorable. And I'll give you some examples, and then I'll give you an example of some of the advice that I gave to Donald Trump. How's that? Just trying to be practical and helpful. But here's a great one. Proverbs 11:22. Now I'm going to read it to you in a few English translations. As a jewel of gold in a swine snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. That's King James, New King James. As a ring of gold in a swine snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. Now you got to admit, by putting it like that, those vivid terms, it really jumps at you. That is like, wow. There's the word like, but used differently. A beautiful woman who rejects good sense is like a gold ring in a pig's snout. That's HCSB. ESV, like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. NIV, almost the same. NET, almost the same. Again, each one using like a gold ring, like a gold ring. NLT, a beautiful woman who lacks discretion is like a gold ring in a pig's snout. New Jewish version, same thing. Like a gold ring in the snout of a pig is a beautiful woman bereft of sense. The Hebrew just says this. It just says a gold ring in the snout of a pig, a beautiful woman lacking discretion, lacking good sense. In other words, it's a metaphor, but every English translation I'm looking at translates it as if it was a simile. Again, it adds the word like. Are you with me? The Hebrew is literally, Nezem Zahav Ba'af Chazir, a gold ring in a pig's snout, Isha Yafa V'Sarat Ta'am, a beautiful woman who rejects or lacks discretion, lacks sense. It doesn't use the word like. So in Hebrew, it's even more vivid. It's even more jarring an image. And of course, you think there's a pig with a gold ring in its snout. Are you kidding me? How inappropriate. That'd be like a beautiful woman who doesn't have sense. She's like that gold ring, and the lack of sense is like a pig. But the Hebrew does not have like. It just presents these things, these polar images that are quite jarring. But that's what Proverbs is filled with. 866-34-TRUTH. So here's some of my advice to Donald Trump based on the wisdom of Proverbs. All right? And I give, and you can read this by going to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, and clicking on the latest article, ASKDR Brown. Just click on latest article there. Here's some of the advice I give him. I said, let's notice that every campaign, every political campaign is a battle of words, right? The words you speak on your platform speeches, the words you speak when you appear on TV, the words you speak in a debate, the words that newspapers write or online magazines write, the words that you put out in your ads, the words that you send out in social media, words, 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 words. Barring some completely unexpected scandal or an expected scandal, barring some behavioral thing, let's say suddenly Hillary Clinton had massive health issues, let's say Donald Trump's tax returns were somehow hacked and released, and they had some horrific, you know, shocking information there. Barring that, it's about the words. Words, words, words. It's not, one of these candidates is not going to pull a gun on somebody. One of these candidates is not going to, you know, jump off the platform and tackle somebody, right? So it's going to be words. Words are going to sink their campaign or enable them to swim. Proverbs 18:21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. So I give this example of how his campaign could have avoided a whole lot of heartache and could have actually moved on and stayed on message after the Democratic National Convention. Because remember, the speech by the Muslim father with the Muslim mother there, they had lost a son in Iraq. So he served in the military, a Muslim son served in the military, died serving America. And he attacked Donald Trump very strongly, and Donald Trump went back after this guy, and it really hurt his campaign, definitely took a blow. So I point out what it says in Proverbs 12:16: fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an insult. I said, well, what if you'd read this verse right after you were attacked on national TV by Mr. Khan? Obviously, what he said upset you. You felt personally insulted, Mr. Trump. But what does a foolish person do? That person shows his annoyance at once. What does a wise person do? That person overlooks an insult. So what would have been a good way to respond to the cons? Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So you could have tweeted out, as a fellow American, I mourn the loss of Mr. and Mrs. Khan. I celebrate their son's sacrifice, and I call on them to stand with me in fighting radical Islam. And then if you want it, adds with a smile, and thanks for the offer of the copy of the Constitution, but I have a few copies myself, and we agree it's a great document, and you move on. And you move on. You take the high ground. You don't get into a fight with someone. Here, look, if you are riding on a horse and there's somebody on the ground and they're challenging you, come on, wrestle me, and they're covered with mud, you get off that horse and wrestle with them. Even if you win the wrestling match, you're going to get muddy. You're going to get dirty. But if you ride by and say, no, you're probably a pretty strong wrestler, but not going to wrestle you, and you drive on, okay, now you don't get muddied in the process. If all of us could live by the wisdom of Proverbs, oh, trust me, there are a bunch of moments in my life I wish I'd heeded the wisdom of Proverbs. We'll be right back. Oh, I've got to give you a really important update. We come back Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Believing in God makes no sense. It's to me, it's the dumbest thing. It's for people that can't accept the fact that they're going to die and rot in the ground like I'm going to do, and it gives them some relief from that thought, because it's not the nicest thought in the world.
That is from Ray Comfort's important new movie, The Atheist Delusion. It's getting amazing responses. It's leading believers to worship. It's getting non-believers to open their eyes. He seeks to destroy alleged scientific evidence against the existence of God with one simple question. You kind of watch it unfold. If you haven't downloaded it yet, we extended it from last week and then added in another download. Our entire six-week school of cultural engagement from Fire School of Ministry a few summers back. This is over 40 hours of teaching on audio, normally $150 on CD. You can download the entire summer school for just $20. So take advantage of that at AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. Before I go to the phones, 866-34-TRUTH, if you missed it yesterday, we have the audio up on YouTube. My interview with Pastor Roger Jimenez, who stood by his comments that he wished the Orlando shooter had done a better job and killed all the gays and lesbians that were there, said that they're all pedophiles, said no homosexual can be saved. It was an ugly discussion. I publicly called him to repentance. And of course, his comments to me was that he found my comments despicable. We need to pray for repentance for this man. But you can check that out at AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. Just check on latest video. 866-34-TRUTH. We start in Charlotte with Chad. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Shalom to you.
Shalom.
I have a quick question. In Daniel 12:4, it says, knowledge shall be increased. So in my research, I was looking at a Time magazine in September 26, 1955, the second president of Egypt, which is General Nasser. He said the Jews will not be respected because they left here black and came back white. We cannot accept you. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. I'm not familiar with the specific quote. So could you just run that by me again in terms of your source for that?
The Time magazine, September 26, 1955.
Mm-hmm.
The second president of Egypt, which is Jamal Nasser.
Yeah,
he said the Jews will never be respected because they left here black and came back white, so you will have no peace. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, okay. I've never heard that quote. So let's see here.
You could Google it real quick.
Yeah, yeah. I'm doing that right now. That's one of the benefits of what we can do here. Interesting quote from Gamal Abdel Nasser. Right. So Nasser, of course. Yeah, that's what I wasn't getting with the name you were giving me.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine. I mispronounce American names, let alone Egyptian. Second president of Egypt. So George Friedman, in his book, The End of the Jewish People, pointedly states that the Europeans claiming to be Jews are nothing more than Hebrew-speaking Gentiles. He claims the late president of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, stated on television. So now it claims this is on television. You, the Jews, will never be able to live here in peace because you left here black but came back white. We cannot accept you. According to everything I can see here, the thing's bogus. Even the reference, this is allegedly on television. It's in a book that is claiming that today's Jews are not Jews at all. They're Hebrew-speaking Gentiles. It even misspells English words here. So I would almost guarantee it's an internet myth. But tell you what, I'm going to leave it up on my screen, and I'm going to see if I can check out the origins of it. See if there's any accuracy.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. Yeah, I'm confused with that. So I just want to have better clarity with that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Listen, it makes zero sense to me. It doesn't. And you have to understand that there has been an ongoing history. It's not like the Jews just appeared there. They've been living there in the land of Israel through the centuries. They've never been out of it. So we know who the people of Israel are, the Jewish people. What's happened as Jews have scattered around the world, they've intermarried with different communities. Hence, you have Jews who look European and Jews who look African and Jews who look Indian, etc.
Because in the Bible it says they'd be scattered all across the nations.
Right, and as they were scattered, they intermarried. But if a woman married into the Jewish people or a man married into the Jewish people and continued to live as Jews, then those ethnic traits would be added in. What happens with most Jews is when they intermarry, they assimilate. So they intermarry, and then they become totally lost to the Jewish people. But if someone marries in and continues to live as a Jew, then those ethnic and biological traits will be added in. But there's no mystery. In other words, we can trace and see who the Jewish people have been through the centuries and where we have been. And again, we're a Middle Eastern people as opposed to a Caucasian people or an African people, a Middle Eastern people. So, as far as I can tell, this is just a bogus quote. But I'll research it and then I'll announce it again on the radio. So thanks for bringing it to my attention, sir.
Okay, I'm an avid listener, so I just wanted to know about like how long before the research happens, so I could just be tuning in to make sure I have better clarity for that.
It should be over the course of the show. I don't think this is going to be a hard one to check out, to be honest with you. But otherwise, by tomorrow, I'll give an update. But thanks, sir, for calling. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks also for being an avid listener. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Concord, North Carolina. Brett, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So I was a student of yours down in Florida, and I've followed you for a long time. So I appreciate you taking my call.
All right. And you're in Concord now?
Yes. Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Well, so I've been going through Romans, and the question I have is right from the beginning of Romans 3. It says, what advantage then is there in being a Jew, or what value is there in circumcision? Much in every way. First of all, they have been entrusted with the very words of God. Later in that same chapter, it talks about how Jews and Gentiles alike are all under sin. And so anyways, I just want you to help clarify for me, what does it mean when it says that there's an advantage or value in being a Jew or in circumcision?
Yes, sir. At the end of the second chapter, Paul is saying that the real Jew is one who's circumcised in the heart and not only in the flesh, probably meaning between two Jews, who's the real Jew, the one that's just circumcised in the flesh or the one that's also circumcised in the heart. But either way, Paul doesn't want someone to think that there's no advantage, no profit, no help. And the fact is that out of all the peoples on the earth, the Jews were the only ones entrusted with the scriptures. So they had the very oracles of God. They had that advantage. They had the law of God. They had the one true God as their God, and they had the scriptures. Now, of course, the whole world, through the spread of the gospel, has the Bible. But at the time that Paul was writing, the only way that you could find out what the will of the God of Israel was through the Jewish people, and hence that advantage. And then the Messiah comes to them first, and he's the one that makes him known. We have in Jesus equal standing, and outside of Jesus equal need for salvation. But having access to the Word and knowing the will of God, the truth of the God of Israel, that's massive. And that was entrusted to Israel.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown here, delighted to be with you. Let's grab another nugget from Proverbs, and then I'm going to go right to your calls. How about this? Proverbs 17:27, whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. When you listen, when you're not easily provoked, when you weigh words, that shows understanding. And as far as speaking prematurely or holding your peace, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's deemed intelligent. And as far as being short-tempered, there are many warnings in Proverbs about hot temper. Before I was saved, I had a horrific, I was famous, infamous for my hot temper. Proverbs 14:29, whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. So to all of my friends listening that struggle with your temper, you can master it. You can rule it. With God's help and grace, you can. I realized early on, okay, I've got this intense temper. I have to master it. I have to rule it. Based on another verse in Proverbs about he who rules his spirit is better than one who takes a city. And this verse, Proverbs 14:29, he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. Picture it like this. Next time you lose your temper, dad, in front of your wife and kids, you're holding up a big sign saying, I am a fool. That's what you're doing. You're holding up a big sign. In Hebrew, it's, you know, literally exalts folly. So what does that mean? Well, here's a word picture to help you. You're holding up a big sign over your head that says, I am a fool. I'm right. You can't do. No, no, no. You're not being rough and tough. You're holding up a big sign saying, I am a fool. And instead of gaining respect, you're losing it. Wisdom from Proverbs 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Rita in New York City. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah. You want me to turn off the radio?
Yes, you better turn off the radio, please.
Okay, then. 1 second, please.
Go ahead. You got it there? I tell you what. Howard, you'll help Rita get situated, okay? Let's help her get situated, and then we'll try to get her back on the air, all right? So we'll do that momentarily. Let's go to Maple Grove, Minnesota. Deborah, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thanks so much, Dr. Brown. My question is, sometimes I see people wearing a smaller tallit, typically, but other times, like I've seen your friend Jonathan Kahn wear the larger tallit that covers him further. So I'm wondering what the difference is. And also, I wonder if there's a tallit that gets wrapped around a couple during a Jewish wedding or not.
Yeah, as far as the tallit, there's really one size primarily. There are some you can wear in a certain way that kind of go from your shoulders, you know, way down to your legs. But the tallit is basically, it's covering, it's over the shoulders, it's around the back basically. Now, a religious Jewish man wears something under his shirt, and then that has the ritual fringes as well, and he'll have those coming out of the corners of his pants on top, you know, around his waist, as a reminder to keep the commandments and his identification as a Jew. But there's no difference in the size of a tallit. And yes, a couple can be wrapped in one. You come under the chuppah, but there are some who would wrap a couple in that as a sign of coming under God's covering. But there's no symbolic difference in the size of a tallit. It's more a matter of style and of preference. And then you can kind of bunch it up differently. But it has the same purpose. It is based initially on the commandment to wear the fringes, and then this becomes an additional garment. This would not have been something current so much in Jesus' day, but something added at a later time. But the size makes no difference.
God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. For those of you who listened to my interview with Pastor Roger Jimenez yesterday and were as grieved over it as I was, we now have that on YouTube, so it's the audio on YouTube. That was yesterday as he defended his statement that the government should line up all homosexuals, gun them down. Anyways, it was a pathetic interview. Very, very sad, to hear the way in which he entrenched himself more deeply. And did I expect it to go that way? Yeah, but you're always hopeful. I'm always hopeful that someone will listen to scriptural truth and scriptural reason. So you can listen to that by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll see it on latest video. And I'm going to do, probably in the next few days, for early next week maybe, I'm going to do an extended teaching. We'll put it on video. We'll put it on YouTube, where I break down some of the theological errors and help people understand really how wrong and dangerous this is. All right, your Jewish-related calls. We go to Monroe, North Carolina. Jamie, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do, and God bless you.
My question
has to do with us doing a ladies' Bible study in the book of Esther.
Yeah.
And we have two questions that we've come up with. One is, it appears Mordecai and Esther or Hadassah should have left Susa when they could have and been in Jerusalem instead. And therefore, our question is, obviously, you don't think Jews today should all be in Israel, but I was just wondering your reason why they shouldn't be there. And then also, do you think there'll be a time when they are all called to be there other than the millennial period? And then the second question has to do with Haman, and he was so incredibly rich that he was able to bribe Xerxes with that huge pile of silver. And we just wondered, do you have any idea how he got so rich?
Right. To answer the second question, there is no reference to his wealth. We have no verifiable information about him outside of what's written in Scripture. But he ends up, basically, he's favored because of what he does. He's not favored because of a bribe in Esther. And then, of course, God reverses it. But as to why they were still Jews in captivity, yes, the goal was for all the Jews to come back after the Babylonian exile. That was the goal. That was the vision and the 70 years prophesied by Jeremiah. But about 45,000 or so that were counted came back, and then you could add in other numbers to that. But that's what is listed in Ezra and Nehemiah, which means that there were Jews that stayed behind. Why they stayed behind? They may have been unable to come back. They may have had other hardship that prevented them. Here you have Esther being raised without parents, so there's further hardship. We simply don't know. But I do not believe that God is telling all Jews around the world right now that you must be back in the land of Israel. There's a difference between God saying, I will bring you back, and I am saying, go back. Right, there's one thing that God does by his own initiative. There's something else that is something that he calls us to do in response. Will there be a time when he's calling all Jewish people back to land? Well, certainly not Jewish believers in Jesus, not all of us, because we're called to go into all the world and make disciples. But will there be a time when anti-Semitism will rise on a certain level and it'll be imperative for Jews to even leave America in large numbers? That could be. A friend of mine, Tom Hess, wrote a book years ago, and it was basically talking about a massive flood of anti-Semitism that was going to come to America. And it pinpointed when, pretty much, and it was an urgent warning for Jews to leave and go to Israel. And then the book came out about the same time in Russian with the same warning. Well, it was absolutely applicable to the Soviet Union at that time. It mm-hmm. was totally applicable when it came out there, and many Jews from the former Soviet Union fled and made it safely to Israel then, whereas it wasn't applicable to America at that time. So was the timing off? That's a fair question to ask. I mean, I sat with Tom many years ago, and we smiled and asked about it. He still feels it's an urgent calling from the Lord. So that day may happen. If so, I trust that the word, the warning will get out plainly. Things are about to collapse, get out. Things are about to collapse, get out. But the Jewish population in Israel is over 6 million now, which is significant because of the loss in the Holocaust being 6 million. And, for example, France has seen a great uptick in Jews immigrating to Israel, making Aliyah because of the rise of anti-Semitism there. And that seems to be a way that God uses. Certainly Satan is attacking through anti-Semitism, but it seems to be a way that God is using to bring Jewish people back to the land.
Well, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Thanks for calling and digging into the book of Esther. All right, let's try Rita again in New York City. Hopefully we're good to go this time. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Well, I just said not much about in Genesis 22 about when God did say unto Abraham that he should give him his one and only son Isaac for a sacrifice. And he did it and he gave it unto him. And they traveled, I think it was 3 days journey.
Yep, to Mount Moriah.
And to Mount Moriah. But on their way then, Isaac was a little boy, and he was the one that bring the wood. And they traveled all the way with two more men.
Right, then Isaac says to his father, right, we've got the wood, we've got the fire, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham says,
no,
God
I'm
himself.
I'm going further. Abraham rode a donkey, and right. Two men goes with him.
All right, tell you what, we're real short on time. Would you be able to get to the specific question? All right, tell you what, Howard, do your best to explain toward your sister that we're just having a little hard time finding out what the question is. If you find that off the air, put it on, then I'll try to answer it. So thanks for helping us there. All right, we do our best to get everybody's questions on. It doesn't always work. We go to Houston, Texas. Nathan, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I figured since you're talking about the wisdom literature, the perfect opportunity for me to ask about the book of Job.
Yes, sir.
Specifically a passage, and I know you've been working on the book lately, but I want to ask a specific passage in Job 36, specifically from verses 26 and a couple verses down. Where, I mean, it sounds to me that this is talking about, you know, the cloud sort, or God through the cloud sort of gathering up water and pouring it, you know, on the earth through clouds. And is this accurate? Because I'm interested in this question because I've been looking this week specifically about the issue of the Rakia in Genesis 1.
Yeah.
And I know there's different views out there that there's that it's a solid dome, and others say no, it's the atmosphere, and the water is above is, you know, the clouds that suck in the water and it comes down. So, I'm interested to get your take on that. So,
yeah, the Hebrew word rakia seems to be related to the concept of like a piece of beat out metal or something like that. If we can see how it's used in related languages, cognate languages in the ancient Near East. But that doesn't mean that ultimately it has that meaning. In other words, it could have a certain root, but the final meaning doesn't have to fully reflect that. You could argue that the Rakia, the firmament, was pictured as a dome, as you mentioned, and that it had windows, and that when the windows were open, the water that was on the other side of it came through. And that's how the clouds were pictured as holding back the rain in a literal way. But all you have to understand is that many times the Hebrew Bible is using descriptive language. The ends of the earth is not necessarily a statement that the world is flat. The sun rising and the sun setting, which we also use today, is not necessarily a statement that, that the sun goes around the earth. That's the way it was perceived. So it's using the language of the ancient world and describing God's work in creation and God's work in nature in glorious ways. And also when you consider in the ancient world that, that all these different elements were actually considered things like deities. And, you know, you've got one ancient account where goddess Tiamat is split in two and half of her makes heaven, half of her makes earth. So this is extraordinary, lofty monotheism of the creation accounts in the Bible, which is totally different than the ancient Near East, but sometimes using descriptional language. Hey, stay right there. I'll finish on the other side.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Make me glad by your deeds, O Lord, so I sing for joy at all your hands have made. How great are your works, O Lord, Elohim.
Welcome, welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Thanks to Paul Wilbur for leading us in 866-34-TRUTH. So getting back to Nathan in Houston, there will be descriptions in a book like Job here, Elihu extolling God's creation, that will give a fairly accurate picture that scientists would agree with in terms of, okay, here's a general description of what's happening with the rain. But a lot of times it is basically from human observational language. I said descriptive earlier, observational is probably better. Observational language, looking at things and then recognizing that it's God who is behind all of this. So it's not a matter of being scientifically correct or incorrect, or did an ancient Hebrew understand the universe the way we do? In many ways, no. And that wouldn't be expected. In fact, if an ancient Hebrew, if the Bible talked about the earth being round in explicit ways, you could maybe say some verses talking about the circle of the earth. Others say that just means the horizon, looking out at the horizon. But either way, if the Bible explicitly said the earth is round, then those observing and then scientists until several centuries back would have said the Bible is false, the Bible is wrong, and dismissed it. So the Bible is not primarily here as a scientific textbook as much as a theological textbook, and then it looks at nature and from that talks about the amazing works of God in nature. So, you know, the way the psalmist might describe God forming us in the womb or Job describing it, it may not be in a scientifically accurate way or way that science would say it, but it is saying that God is the one who's doing this work and this is how it was understood at that time and God's the one behind it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense. So I was just curious about, because I know there are different passages that talk about, you know, the clouds pouring down rain, like in Ecclesiastes 11 and all. So, you know, I know a lot of it is, a lot of the writing is phenomenological,
yeah,
if it's the word to use.
But wouldn't we say, we would say that God pours down rain, right? I mean, we would... that the clouds pour down rain, there'd be no issue on that. But again, you know, when it talks about the windows of heaven, was that a metaphor or did they actually think there were windows? It doesn't really matter to me either way. You know what I'm saying? If they understood that it was God who was behind sending the rain and that God was now going to send a lot of rain when he, quote, opened the windows. You know, talk about the womb being opened and closed. Is that the exact scientific description of barrenness and fruitfulness? Would a scientist say it the same way? Not necessarily, but that's the way of saying God controlled it. God made the person barren. God made the person fruitful. And again, that's the key issue. Here, there's even an example of one particular animal in Deuteronomy, the 14th chapter, that from all appearances chews the cud, right? According to everything that ancient science knew, this animal chews the cud. And according to appearance, it chews the cud. and because you could not eat an animal that had this characteristic and chewed the cud, you know, one characteristic and chewed the cud, then this animal was excluded. Well, I read a book, and this critical Bible scholar says, you see, the Bible's not infallible. It mentions this particular animal and says you can't eat it because it doesn't have true hoofs, but it chews the cud. Well, the fact is that's what they understood. They understood that animal chewed the cud. So if you said you could eat it, it would have looked like you were eating an animal that was forbidden. So this is absolutely not what the Bible is about, that you're going there to find out the latest science. You're going there to find out who God is, the creator. I do believe, though, that if the Bible made a definitive scientific statement, then that would be true. But I don't find that in a major way through the scriptures, as I'm sure you understand. The other thing that's very enlightening, Nathan, is to read through other ancient Near Eastern creation accounts. And when you read through them, I mean, it's a shocker. You're talking about as crass as could be, and the gods are disturbed because people are making noise, and they're going to wipe them out, and there's a battle here, or other gods are making too much noise, and there's a fight here, and this one, as I said, gets cut in half, and this one chops up the other one, and as opposed to Genesis, and God says, let there be light, and there is light. God says, let the waters gather together, let the dry land appear, and it was so. I mean, it is a sovereign, clear, creator God, bringing order out of disorder, bringing light out of darkness, and establishing his life-giving ways on the earth that are good, good, very good, and his ways of reproduction, and each thing reproduces after itself. It's all laid out in this perfect order of a majestic God who acts within himself to bring about creation, and there are no other competing deities that he's battling with, and you know, this one beats him and he beats him back, etc. So just to say, that's the message, and then the wonder of the specific ways he does it, that's normally by observational language. Anyway, thank you, sir, for the call. All right, do I have one more minute for something in Proverbs? Yeah. How about this? In terms of self-control, in terms of the message of self-control, how about this from Proverbs? Proverbs 25:16. If you found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it. We're in a culture of opulence, indulgence, even decadence. Proverbs gives practical wisdom for self-control. How about this? Proverbs 25:28. A man without self-control is like a city broken and left without walls. Anything can get in and anything can get out. No walls, no barriers, no self-control. Is that what you want your life to be? You want that to be a picture of your life? Or do you want to have those boundaries in place? Friends, if your life is out of control, great thing to do, humble yourself before God. Ask him for help. Recognize your need. Don't try to tough it out. Recognize your need. And then, read Proverbs chapter a day, among many other things. But do that. Read Proverbs one chapter each day. And keep doing it. Start another month, do it again. You have a month that's shorter, read two chapters one day. This way, the first of each month, you start in Proverbs 1. It'll start to sink in there. It'll start to penetrate your heart, your mind. And then each day, say, God, give me wisdom. God, give me wisdom. God, give me wisdom. And you'll find it there. You will really find it there. All right, remember, check out my latest articles. I've got Winning Strategy for Donald Trump based on the book of Proverbs. That's my latest article. My interview with Pastor Robert Jimenez from yesterday, rejoicing at the murder of gays and lesbians in June at the Pulse Bar in Orlando. You can listen to that disturbing interview at AskDrBrown.org. And then check out our resource offer. You'll be blessed by it. My bottom line today says it in the Word. If you lack wisdom, ask God. Ask him. He gives to all men liberally. There is much Hebrew wisdom in the amazing book of Proverbs. We'll explore it on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire today. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. If you have a Jewish-related question of any kind, a Hebrew-related question of any kind, Israel-related question, Judaism-related question of any kind, even an Islam-related question, give me a call, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. I'll do my best to give you a solid answer from the Word or from what's happening in the world today. Again, 866-348-7884. The last hour, we were dipping into the book of Proverbs, enjoying some of the amazing wisdom of this book, the Hebrew word proverb coming from a root that means to compare. So a proverb was a comparison. A proverb was a statement. This compares to this, or this is like this. It was a contrast. This happens to the righteous, this to the unrighteous. This is the way of a fool. This is the way of the wise. A mashal in later rabbinic literature comes to be used as the word for a parable. But Proverbs, an amazing book in the midst of the amazing Bible, the Word of God. And the thing that everybody loves about Proverbs is how down to earth it is. Oh, yes, it talks about God. It absolutely does talk about God. There's no question. There are references to the Lord. I once taught a class, just a one-night lecture, about the God of the book of Proverbs. But it is giving down-to-earth wisdom that even a non-believer could live by. You say, well, wait. Doesn't say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Oh, yes. Ultimately, true knowledge, true wisdom comes when we acknowledge God. That's first and foremost. We acknowledge Him. We reverence and honor Him. And then, out of that, there's a recognition of right and wrong. There's a recognition of wisdom and folly. There's a recognition of life and death and light and darkness. That comes out of a recognition of who He is and we're His creation. At the same time, there are principles in Proverbs that anyone could live by and benefit from. For example, even if you don't believe in the existence of God. So no, ultimately, you cannot be a wise person, a truly wise person, and not know God. We understand that. You may be wise in the ways of the world, but in a true lasting wisdom, there are eternal issues and eternal values and eternal absolutes that will not be understandable without God. But let's say you're a lazy person. If you just read through Proverbs and what it says about laziness and what it says about a sluggard, you just read through those verses and then applied them and what it says about being diligent and hard work, you would do much better in every area of life. So these are down-to-earth principles that everybody can live by and that have their ultimate value to believers in the God of the Bible. So I want to dig in to Proverbs. Maybe I'll give you a Hebrew nugget or two in the midst of it. I want to catch up on some Israel-related news and take your Jewish-related calls. 866-348-7884. I was also asked in the first hour from an avid listener, Chad from Charlotte, about an alleged quote going back to Gamal Abdel Nasser, who was the second president of Egypt, or leader of Egypt from 1954 till his death in 1970. He was a firm opponent of Israel. Of course, after him, Anwar Sadat made a peace treaty with Israel and then ended up being assassinated, basically for doing that. Did he say something about today's Jews being fake Jews? Or says, what was he saying? Is it accurate?
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I'm trying to trace this quote during breaks here, and I don't want to definitively say that the thing is bogus, but thus far, everything I can see tells me that it is, and I keep seeing it attributed to different places, and when I check those places, it doesn't exist. So I'm talking about an alleged quote by Gamal Nasser, who allegedly said, "You," meaning the Jews, "will never be able to live here in peace because you left here black and came back white. We cannot accept you." All right. So this is End of the Jewish People, 1967, George Friedman. It says he quotes him. Now, I've seen it said that he said it on national news. Then I've seen it said that he said it on, or national TV, excuse me, Egyptian TV. Then it's allegedly in Time magazine. Always pointed back to this one book, which is a pretty intense attack on the Jewish people, if I'm understanding this book correctly. And it's giving another reference, the 13th Tribe, Arthur Koestler. You can download the PDF of the book, and he doesn't actually quote it either. Just so, from what I can tell, now, by the way, Nasser was quite an enemy of Israel. So who in the world knows what he would have said, what that would have meant. But I still can't find any evidence that this was actually ever said. It seems to me to be a bogus quote referenced by one guy in one book, allegedly, and most of the places quoting it are these conspiracy theory places or these black Israelite or Hebrew Israelite, that they're the true blacks and Jewish people are not Jews. Almost every website that I see, and they're quoting the same thing, it's stated on television, and oh yeah, that's where it is. So right now, as far as I can tell, we put it in the category of bogus, but if I find out more, I will let you know. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, how about a little wisdom from Proverbs on the subject of self-control? Are you ready? "When you sit down to eat with a ruler, observe carefully what is before you." Or you could translate, "Observe carefully who is before you." Either is valid from the Hebrew. "And put a knife to your throat if you are given to appetite." Given to appetite. Yeah, that would kind of be a Hebrew way of saying if you are a glutton. In fact, let me just grab that Proverbs, the 23rd chapter, in a couple of different translations. So you're talking about a vivid image. You don't want to go and pig out. You don't want to go and pig out if you are a glutton, if you have a large appetite, if you're sitting before a king. Bad, bad move. Here's the new Jewish version. "When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider well who is before you. Thrust a knife into your gullet if you have a large appetite. Do not crave for his dainties, for they are a counterfeit food." Let me read another translation to you. This is just so lively. It's wonderful. It's Proverbs, New Living Translation, which is a mild paraphrase. "While dining with a ruler, pay attention to what is put before you. If you're a big eater, put a knife to your throat. Don't desire all the delicacies, for he might be trying to trick you." And then notice what follows. "Don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Be wise enough to know when to quit. The blink of an eye, wealth disappears, for it will sprout wings and fly away like an eagle." Again, that vivid imagery. No, the money doesn't actually get wings and fly away. No. The jewels, the gold, the silver, they don't get wings and fly away. You get the point. It can be here today and gone tomorrow. You can be the wealthiest person in the country today and have nothing tomorrow. It can disappear. And when Jesus speaks about the deceitfulness of wealth in the parable of the sower in Matthew 13, Luke 8, and Mark 4, when he speaks about the deceitfulness of wealth, it's deceitful in several ways. It's deceitful in that it gives you a false security. Hey, I'm rich. I'm protected. It's deceitful and it gives you a false sense of identity. I'm somebody because I have money. And number one, as Jesus warned in Luke 12, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. So you are not any more safe, secure, or a person, any more of a person because you're wealthy than if you're middle class or if you're poor. And your wealth could turn to poverty overnight. So Proverbs has some very, very practical ways of eating, dealing with these lifestyle issues, and gives us practical advice. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's head over to Manassas, Virginia. Joseph, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call. A question about Deuteronomy 13:7-12. It says there, suppose your brother, your mother's son, your son or daughter, wife of your bosom, best friend, leads you away to serve other gods, yada, 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 you shall put them to death. so I wonder how you reconcile that with faith in Yeshua. And, he said the law isn't abolished. God's the same yesterday, today, and forever. I do believe that. I guess the authority of the law has changed to be filtered through the new covenant, I think. I don't know if my idea was, I was thinking about it, and if someone leads you to serve another god, that's kind of a spiritual murder, so I guess the punishment of death is justified, but I just wondered how you justify that bigger question, because, obviously we don't put people to death today.
Yeah. Yes, certainly under Old Testament Israel, this was about the greatest crime you could commit, because if you could get the people to turn away from God into idolatry, you'd bring about the destruction of the entire nation. If you could seduce them into sin, it would be worse than getting them all to drink poison and die. It would be a spiritual suicide. And then that has ramifications for the whole world, because if ancient Israel gets wiped out, there's no savior, there's no salvation. God chose Israel so that he would have a people through whom the Messiah could come, be recognized, revealed, and then declared to the world. So if Israel ceases to exist, the Messiah doesn't come, there's no salvation. So you're talking about massively high stakes, and idolatry being the gravest sin, and that would lead to the other horrific things like sacrificing children to idols and all types of other abuses and immorality and injustice. They would all flow out of idolatry. But what we have to understand is, for the most part, what was penalized with a death penalty in the Old Testament is penalized with excommunication in the New Testament. That in the Old Testament, you drove out the Canaanites. In the New Testament, you drive out demons. In the Old Testament, there was physical warfare. In the New Testament, there is spiritual warfare. So you'll notice a phrase that occurs repeatedly in Deuteronomy: purge the evil from your midst, put away the evil from your midst. Paul quotes it in 1 Corinthians 5, and he says if someone claims to be a brother or sister, right, and they are a fornicator or an adulterer or a drunkard or whatever other sin is listed there, they claim to be a brother or sister, then you are to disfellowship them. You are to put them out of your midst. You are to judge those who are in your midst. So meaning if they refuse to repent and they claim to be a brother or sister. Remember, a city like Corinth, you may have had maybe 75 believers when he wrote there. So it's pretty serious. You're disfellowship. You're out. It's not like you leave First Baptist and go to First Presbyterian. If you don't like that, you go to First Assembly,
And, right.
There was one congregation, through the city led by elders, and that was that. So there's a different application. We learn from it that there must be a radical loyalty and a ruthless love. We learn from it that we must have an attitude of no compromise. We learn from it how dangerous it is for someone to try to turn us away from the one true God and deny him. So if you had someone who was a brother or sister and then began to teach heresy, they're rebuked once, twice. If they refuse to hear, then you cut them off. Romans tells us that, and Titus tells us that. On the one hand, it's to make sure that you yourself are not infected by it and others are not infected by it. And on the other hand, it is also for that person's benefit with the hope that this will wake them up and come to repentance. So we don't stone those people today, just like we don't stone a Sabbath breaker. We don't stone a disobedient teenager. We don't stone an adulterer. We don't burn a witch. But we learn from that how serious these issues are. And then we make spiritual application in our lives today. And it's a pretty consistent hermeneutic in that respect. There are certain things you could argue for a death penalty for murder based on Genesis 9, even before the law. You take a life, you lose your life, because every human is created in the image of God. And Romans 13 does tell us that the government bears the sword for good reason. So there will be penalties for crimes. But the law given to Israel was very specific. We have a new covenant now, and we see the application in the New Testament scriptures. Thank you, sir, for the question.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. Just taking a glance over at our latest videos on our YouTube channel. You can view them by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And had a kind of brutal interview. I thought it could get ugly, and it really was. Absolutely stand against many things that a pastor said yesterday, rejoicing in the murder of gays and lesbians, saying they're all pedophiles and none of them can possibly be saved. And you can watch that. We actually listen to it at the YouTube channel. And, you know, I am sure you are going to get people that come on and say, yeah, I agree with what he had to say. And you'd be shocked by where these people stand. I mean, it's really, really ugly. Here you go. Here you go. Ha ha. This Sissy Brown urges a man of God to repent as rock music plays in the background of his worldly broadcast. How ironic. Yeah, there you go. Sissy Brown. Oh, that's a new one. I haven't had that. I'll have to add that to the records. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Burlington, North Carolina. Angela, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I have a Jewish calendar here that was printed in Israel, and mm-hmm. It says it has a special name for this week's Shabbat, and it's in Shabbat, and then NACHAMU, and I was wondering if you could tell me how to pronounce that and what it means.
Yeah, just the way you spelled it. Spell that for me again, please.
NACHAMU.
Right. Okay. Nachamu. Nachamu is Hebrew for comfort. And Isaiah 40, Nachamu, Nachamu on me, comfort, oh, comfort my people, is the beginning of Isaiah the 40th chapter. So Shabbat Nachamu, here's how it works. This past week was what was called Tisha B'Av, all right? Tisha B'Av is the ninth day of the month of Av. And this is a time where you remember all of the different calamities experienced in Jewish history on one day. And it's a day when many Jews fast and mourn through the day. According to Jewish tradition, the first temple was destroyed on the ninth of Av. The second temple was destroyed on the ninth of Av. Bar Kokhba was defeated by the Romans on the ninth of Av. So this is, and it's sometimes it's that exact date, sometimes it's close to that date, but this is the date where Jewish tradition remembers all of the horrors, all of the suffering. And then the next Sabbath, so this Sabbath coming, starting Friday night into Saturday, is the Sabbath immediately after that. And the text that is read along with the Torah, each week you read a certain portion of the five books of Moses to finish that cycle in 1 year, in 52 weeks, okay? And then in addition to that, there's a portion from maybe from, it could be from King, it could be from Isaiah, it could be from Ezekiel, from one of the books of the Old Testament, there, you know, several that are chosen from, okay? And that is a supplemental reading. It's called a Haftarah or Haftorah that often ties in with the biblical passage or is read for another reason. And the passage that is read on this Sabbath, Nachamu, so there's no ch sound in Hebrew. It's always a ch, like Chanukah, not Chanukah, but Chanukah. So on this Sabbath, the passage that will be read from the prophetic books along with the Torah reading is Isaiah 40, 1 through 26, that speaks of comforting the Jewish people for their suffering. So it is the word of comfort after the mourning on the 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av. And again, Nachamu is imperative form, the root Linachem, to comfort. So Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, Yomar Elhechem, in Isaiah 40, comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. And that's what is commemorated this Sabbath.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And could you tell me how to pronounce that one more time?
Nachamu.
Nachamu.
Yeah, Nachamu. Okay. Nachamu. Nachamu. Yeah, right. So just divide it into three. Na, and then the C-H-A, Cha, and then M-U, Mu. Nachamu, and the accent is on the last syllable. Shabbat Nachamu. You can say that. You are rolling, Angela. Thanks for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. I tell you what, I want to spend another minute in Proverbs here. Let's check out this verse, all right? Let's check out this verse in Proverbs. I read this verse, I'll read it again. If you found honey, Proverbs 25:16, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it. Proverbs is teaching us self-control. Proverbs is teaching us self-control when we have the possibility of indulgence, the possibility of gorging ourselves. Honey's good. Honey's enjoyable, but eat it in moderation. We have to remember that in much of the world through history, and in many parts of the world today, the challenge was to survive. That was the whole challenge. Can we survive? Can we make it to another day? I remember we were doing an outreach in India one time. Nancy was out with a team. This is probably over 20 years ago. And I was not out with the team that day. I was teaching leaders during the day. And she came back telling me about it, that the people in the village all seemed very sad. They unusually sad, somber, depressed. And when she asked about it, they said, yeah, they are so poor that they manage just one meal a day, so they're always hungry. They're always struggling. There are parts of the world like that to this day. And throughout human history, this has often happened, the struggle to survive. That's not our struggle in America. We are opulent. We are decadent. We are indulgent. Just look at the names of some of our desserts, chocolate decadence, or death by chocolate, or chocolate suicide. Yeah, those used to be all my old favorites in the days when I used to eat that stuff. Yeah, I indulge in chocolate. And I know some of you are struggling just to get by, pay your bills, and trying to make it. I'm not ignoring that. But for the most part, you know, even during tough economy, the restaurants are pretty full. The fast food place is still doing a good amount of business. And the ice cream parlors and donut shops and Starbucks of the world are still doing pretty well. And we're still eating in ways that are massively unhealthy because we have so much. And instead of eating to live, to borrow the Joel Fuhrman Eat to Live book, instead of eating to live, we live to eat. And we indulge ourselves and we pay the price. Proverbs says, moderation. Moderation. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the line of fire. 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. If you've got any Jewish-related question for me of any kind whatsoever, by all means, give me a call. Any Israel-related question, any Hebrew-related question. And we are also getting into the book of Proverbs today in particular. 866-348-7884. Before I give you some updates on Israel, before I get back into the book of Proverbs, before I take your calls, let me mention to you that I've been interacting with leaders in World Vision regarding the crisis over one of their employees working in Gaza who allegedly funneled millions of dollars. These are Christian donations, funneled millions of dollars into terrorist accounts, into the accounts of Hamas. And according to the reports, according to Israeli intelligence, he himself has been a long-term Hamas operative. All right. Very, very serious, grievous charges. Australia, Germany stopped funding World Vision in the Middle East right now until they can find out more. And I want to assure you that no one is more mortified about this than the leaders of World Vision, as you could understand. And they have many checks and balances and audits and ways to ensure that funds are going where they're supposed to go. You say, how could this happen? Now, if it is true, Israeli intelligence also says it wasn't just UN, it wasn't just World Vision. It was also, for example, United Nations. They've had workers now with the United Nations and said that things have been misused by Hamas. And in fact, it's pretty much an open secret. I don't know anybody that really debates this, in point of fact, large amounts of aid that come in from all around the world to Hamas, we've shared this many times, do not go to care for needy children or rebuild homes for needy families. They go into armaments. They go into making terror tunnels. They go into stockpiling weapons with the goal of killing Jews. It is a horror. And organizations that are working to help the poor and the needy are really in a very difficult situation. A very difficult situation because you want to help. People tell you, okay, here's where the money's going to go, and it doesn't. Now, if this is true, how could it happen? I mean, doesn't World Vision look for an accounting? As far as I understand, they do. And their goal in the midst of the Middle East conflict is to stay neutral. Their goal is to say, look, I know that things are extremely volatile. I know that things are ugly, that Israel would say, look, we're trying to live in peace, and we've got murderers, radical Muslim terrorists trying to kill us day and night. We're just trying to protect ourselves. And then you have Palestinians saying, They're on stolen land. That's our homeland. We're dispossessed people. We're refugee people because of Israel. World Vision saying we can't get involved in that dispute because our goal is to help needy children in particular. But I've read one claim is that this Hamas operative, if true, showed Israel, yeah, here are the tractors that we've purchased. This is for land development and so on. But then those tractors were used to build terror tunnels. In other words, there are all kinds of devious ways that an evil group like Hamas can take money, allegedly give an accounting for it, and use it for demonic purposes. But pray for justice, pray for truth to arise. In terms of the organizations involved, no one wants that more than World Vision. I've spoken to their leaders. I know their heart here. They want to help. And this is a very painful situation. We'll be right back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is your Thoroughly Jewish host, Michael Brown. Thanks for joining us. 866-348-7884 with any Jewish-related questions. So you may have followed what happened in Israeli Judah. What's the word? Is it Judico? So a Judo participant in a match against an Egyptian participant, he defeats him. Right, this is a heavyweight judo participant. He defeats him, and then you bow to each other and then shake hands. That's what's normally done. So the Israeli defeated the Egyptian, bowed to him, was not reciprocated, reached out to shake hands, and the man specifically avoided the handshake, so violated the typical behavior. And he has been sent back from the Olympic Games. So he has been disciplined because of it. And the Egyptian Olympic Committee also, quote, strongly condemned his actions. And they're the ones behind sending him home. Speaking of the Olympics, Israel does a lot of things that are amazing in terms of technology, in terms of medical developments, agricultural developments. It's amazing. For a country that small, 6 million Jews, right, and then about 1.5 million Arabs and then some others, that country that small has that many Nobel Prize winners and that many patents. And there's a video, I'm sure there are many on YouTube, you know, before you boycott Israel, just realize what you're going to be boycotting. You won't be able to use your cell phone, you won't be able to use your computer, because they all have Israeli technology somewhere in them, somewhere along the line. Yet, and Israel's great militarily. And its combatants are well trained and well disciplined, and they have helped train armies in other parts of the world. In fact, the nation of Singapore has historically had a good relationship with Israel, and in its infancy as a nation, Israelis came over to help train their army and things like that. So in any case. Israel does not do well in the Olympics. For whatever reason, Israel does not do well in the Olympics. So I'm looking at a report here. Hundreds welcome Israeli medalists at the airport. More than 500 enthusiastic fans gathered on Monday night, August 15th, at the Ben-Gurion Airport to welcome back Israeli judokas. So I guess it's judoka. Yordain Gerby and Ora Sasson, who won bronze medals at the Rio Olympics. So the athletes were shocked to see the hundreds of people who were there along with their families. So winning two bronze is like a big, big, big thing in Israel. It's a big thing, winning two bronze medals. And from this report, there have only been 8 medals that Israel's won in the Olympic Games. 8 medals. Wow. So for whatever reason, Israelis got a lot of things down well, but somehow Olympics not too good yet. All right, we go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Teresa, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. I have a biblical question, and it's what I read in the Bible, that the Jewish is God's chosen people. Could you tell me, or maybe you can tell me why that is?
Was yeah, that true? Sure. And this is a positive and a negative, meaning it's been a special privilege, but it's been very costly. So here's the deal. God loves the whole world the same way.
Yeah.
But he wanted to send the Messiah into the world to save the world. And in order to send the Messiah into the world, he had to have a people through whom he could send them. In other words, he had to have a people who would understand that there's only one true God, that would understand what sin is, that would understand what holiness is, that would understand what atonement was, all these things. So he found one man, Abraham. Abram changed his name to Abraham, and then chose his son Isaac, then chose his son Jacob, and then out of the 12 tribes chose Judah, and then through Judah, the Messiah came. And remember, all the followers of Jesus were Jews. And then they were the ones that went and told the rest of the world, because the rest of the world didn't know who God was. And the rest of the world didn't understand issues of sin and salvation and atonement. So someone had to be there for the message. So God chose Israel to teach them, and it took a long time. He would have to discipline them. They would worship other gods, follow false gods. They would commit sin, and he would judge them. Amos, the third chapter, God says to Israel, "You only have I chosen, you only have I known out of all the families on the earth. Therefore, I will punish you for your transgressions." So being chosen had real consequences. There's even the Jewish joke that says, "So why don't you choose someone else?" So that's where it starts. And now everyone who is a follower of Jesus, we are now chosen and elect. So Jew and Gentile in Jesus are chosen and elect and God's people. But it doesn't mean he casts off Israel. Israel's still chosen, but for a Jewish person to be in right relationship with God, they have to come through Jesus like everyone else. So God is still dealing with Israel as a chosen nation. That's why even though we've suffered so much as Jews, as I'm a Jew myself, and been scattered around the world, we somehow survived, not because of our greatness, but because of God's plan. And we survived, and we were brought back to the land after the Holocaust. So that's all because God still has his hand on us. But to be in right relationship with him, we have to come through Jesus the Messiah.
Okay, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. And again, it was never a matter of racial superiority or of preference or prejudice. It was always a matter of God wanting to bless the whole world through the Messiah. Thank you for the question. It's an important one. So where do Jewish people stand? Where does a religious rabbi stand, or a secular Jew? They're chosen, but not in right relationship with God right now, because that only comes through Jesus the Messiah. All right, let's go to Robbie, also in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Brown. It's an honor to be on the show.
Well, thank you.
So I'm a pastor, and I'm preparing a message from Joshua chapter 3, when the people are taking the Ark of the Covenant across the Jordan River. They're finally making it across. And I was doing some research on what was in the Ark, and I've got conflicting biblical information here, and I know that the Bible is inspired, and was just wanting to get your wisdom as to what you thought. So I've researched and found that one place, I think in Hebrews, it says that the budded rod of Aaron and a golden bowl was in it, but then you read in the Old Testament, it seems to infer that the only thing that was in the Ark was the law, the commandments of God. So I didn't know if you had some wisdom to share with me there as to which it was, or both, or...
Yeah, it starts out, if you read through the Pentateuch and look for it there, it starts out that you have the two stone tablets of the Ten Commandments. And then you had, you also had the rod that budded, and the pot with manna. So these were initially in there as memorials, but by the time, so you had the ark that was in the tabernacle, right?
Right.
And then they traveled with it from place to place, and then in David's day he said, "Hey, we need a permanent setting for it. I'll build a temple." And God said, "Great idea, but your son will build it, because you've got bloody hands from all the wars you fought." So that's the that's when it becomes permanent. At that point, the only thing that's in the ark is the tablets. You don't have, aside from the incense altar, etc., going on the way in, but you don't have the other items. You don't have the rod, and then you don't have the manna. That's not there. For whatever reason, it's just not there. It was originally. So describing the tabernacle, that's what Hebrews is describing. That's what was there. Then by the time of the temple, so several hundred years later, we don't have clear evidence of what happened, but we just know it's on the stone tablets. And then after the Babylonian exile, the return, so the second temple, you don't even have the ark with the stone tablets. So you don't even have the mercy, what was called the mercy seat, that was there, and the angels with it, the whole thing that you had in there, you don't even have anymore.
Can you give any validity to the Philistines when they took the ark, that they maybe stole the rod or the bowl? Is there any validity to that? Or,
well, you know, it's an interesting question, because that's when the ark is out of Israelite control for a period of time. The only thing is, you would think it would be mentioned, and it's not. That's the one thing.
Right.
And then more importantly, this is such a triumph for the God of Israel over the gods of the Philistines, and showing that he's the one true God, and you don't mess with the ark. You'd have to think, if they stole some of it, there'd be consequences. So you could speculate, but I would say it's highly unlikely. Hey, thanks for the call, Robbie. Blessings on your message.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Are you an atheist?
Yes, sir.
Are you an atheist?
I'm no longer an atheist.
You're an open-minded atheist?
True. I am no longer an atheist.
Alex, do you believe in God's existence?
No, I do not.
Do you now believe in God's existence?
Yes, I do.
Ah, what can actually change atheist hearts and minds? What question is asked in the atheist delusion that gets people to say, you know what, I think there could be a God? What scientific question could be asked or raised? What is it that's causing Christians to worship at the end of this movie? You can download it from our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. We had it last week. We've extended the special offer one more week because we got such a great response, but time is running short. And we also did something kind of unprecedented. It's if you attended the classes, it would have been like $240, $250 to attend all six summer classes a few years ago at Fire School of Ministry, School of Cultural Engagement. If you ordered the CDs, it's about $150 for over 40 hours of teaching by top experts on wonderful cultural engagement subjects. But you can download everything, all 40-plus hours, for $20. Yeah, so take advantage of this. Order the DVD, Atheist Delusion, and take advantage of this special download offer. You may never see it like this again. And that's at AskDrBrown.org. You can get all further details on the video and on the classes on the website there. You'll see it right on the homepage. Okay, 866-34-TRUTH, a little more wisdom from Proverbs. And this is my part of my article to candidate Donald Trump. Yeah, the Book of Proverbs and a winning strategy for candidate Trump. Trying to be helpful. As I was reading through Proverbs, I'm doing this really neat thing. I never did this before with a formal Bible reading plan. But you do a lot of reading of Scripture. It's the Bible in 90 days. So you might read 14, 15 chapters in a day. If they're shorter chapters, it may be 20-something chapters in the Psalms. Longer chapters might be 12. But you're doing a good amount of reading. And unless you have a lot of time to do it, you're going through it. You know, you're moving quickly through the material. You know, you're reading through Proverbs in a couple of days. You're in and out. So you're getting reminded of so much that's in the Word if you've read the Word before. And you're getting the overview of things and just kind of feeling the it's almost like closing your eyes with a beautiful wind in your face. Just blow. There's like this refreshing nature of the Word just kind of, and you just breathe it in. You drink it in and you let it just blow upon you and breathe it in. Just because you're reading it at a faster pace, all right? So going through Proverbs the other day, I guess yesterday, it's like, there's so much wisdom in here for Donald Trump. If he lived by this, he'll become the next president and be a good president. I read someone posting a negative comment like, well, that's bad advice because it's out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. Tell you what, you read Proverbs like I'm advising him to do, one chapter every day, and ask God for wisdom. Something's going to happen to your heart. Either that or you're going to put the book down. Either that or you're going to quit. You're going to quit reading it. Okay. Proverbs 9, verses 8 and 9. Do not reprove a scoffer or he'll hate you. Reprove a wise man and he'll love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he'll be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he'll increase in learning. So what does a fool do? Well, give you the right to talk to me. I don't need to listen to you. Stupid man. Why? Because your pride's hurt. I don't like being corrected in the natural. I don't welcome that. Someone saying, Mike, what you did was wrong. Dr. Brown, with all respect, what you said was wrong. I don't like that. I don't like writing something and then sitting down with Nancy. Okay, let's review what I wrote. And she says, nah, this is no good here. What do you mean? Well, it doesn't read clearly. I don't like that. I'd rather she'd say, wow, that was great. But I'll look at it and I think this is for my good. This is for the good of the readers. So a wise person, so you can see your own life. Are you acting like a fool or like a wise person? A wise person welcomes constructive correction and input. Here, my grandson Andrew loves playing baseball. So he's actually in Cooperstown, New York with this tournament with teams in from all around the country. Kind of a neat special experience for him. That's where the Baseball Hall of Fame is. And he'll sometimes sit down with a hitting coach. He's just 12 now. And the hitting coach will tell him what he's doing wrong. You know, maybe he has a slump and he's striking out a lot. He's not getting on base much. He's not getting a lot of hits. Or the hits aren't strong hits. And this coach will look, okay, you're doing this. And then our daughter Meg, who loves baseball and loves being out with Andrew doing this, she'll say, okay, she'll walk him through it. Why? Because you want him to do better. You want him to do better. When Nancy sits down with me and we go through a book, I don't like having to rewrite something. I don't like her constructive criticism in that I want it to be perfect from the start. But I've seen over the years that she sharpens things for me, that she really helps me. So because of that, I welcome it. That's what wisdom would do. If you start a business and the business is doing okay, and a successful businessman says, hey, let me give you some input, man. You're doing everything wrong. You could be making 10 times more money and 10 times easier. Well, a wise person says, show me. Show me. And if it's true and if it's constructive, you implement it. And if it's not true, the wise attitude is, all right, please let me hear what you have to say with the hope that I can learn from it. That's what wisdom does. The truly wise person is open to learn. The fool who's making a mess of things says, no, my way or the highway. And then I urge candidate Trump, because he's surrounded by very solid Christian voices, national leaders, and I've had James Robinson on the air. He's one of the clearest leaders in candidate Trump's ears. And he said on the air some of the things that he shared with him, sent him the other day, James chapter 1, with various verses underlined, went through it with his son Eric and said, have your dad read these verses about the tongue, about this, about that. So I pointed out to him Proverbs 24:6, for with guidance you wage your war, and with numerous advisors there is victory. So listen to these godly advisors. Learn from these godly advisors. And as you do, you'll succeed. That's the wisdom of Proverbs. So if you haven't been in Proverbs lately, Maybe do what I'm suggesting should be done. All right, Daniel, I'm not going to have time for your question, but son of David, son of Joseph, at some point, maybe around 2nd, 3rd century, we don't know exactly when, the idea of two messianic figures rose up in Israel. Before that, there was the vision of a priestly Messiah and a royal Messiah, Messiah son of David and a Messiah son of Aaron. That grew up in ancient Israel. We see it reflected in the Dead Sea Scrolls. But at some point, another theology developed of a suffering Messiah. He would win victories, he would fight in battle, and then he would die and be resurrected by the Messiah, son of David. Many traditional Jews still believe in that. The official doctrine being if the Jews are worthy, they'll just be Messiah, son of David. If not, first Messiah, son of Joseph, and then son of David. My bottom line today, if we learn to live by the wisdom of Proverbs, we'll experience the blessing of God.